Thank you. Thank you, David, and thank you, Chris. Okay. So, you may have noticed that some people may view what we're going through as a setback in terms of opening up California, opening up the country. If you're aware at all of the news, you know that the numbers of cases and deaths has gone up a lot, and that many places, including churches, have been asked to pull back. So we're back to the scenario, as many of our people viewing will know, and some may not, we're back to the scenario of not having anybody in the sanctuary. We had 12% seating capacity before, now we have much less than that. So, you know, it's one thing to look at it as a setback, or it could be something else. And, you know, I was checking in with the church leadership and various church members about what they were feeling about all of this, about having to kind of pull back on our plans. And I would say most people handled it with a lot of grace and equanimity. I myself ate a cookie. And then I decided to also embody grace and equanimity and see if I could find a perspective of looking at that, because really it just is, and it seems wise to just let it be, to just allow what is to be, and then to actually know what you're dealing with and then deal with it in an appropriate manner. But beyond that, you know, in the reading that Hugh did, it said that in this Buddhist parable, it said that reality doesn't always meet our expectations. Have you noticed that? And how rude of reality not to always meet my personal expectations. But the reading also said that if we treat everyone, and I'll say also everything, as holy, then the whole world becomes sacred. So I'm calling this, not only for this spiritual center, but for the whole country and for the whole world, a sacred setback. A sacred setback where we have been called to go deeper, where we have been called to process what is happening in the world in a spiritual manner, not necessarily an earth plane manner, but a spiritual manner, so that we can benefit the most from it, and so that the whole world can benefit from our spiritual work together. So that's why I'm calling this talk this morning, Noble Community, because I believe that we are already a noble community, and I think we can go deeper with that. I think that we can become an even nobler community. You know, I was thinking a lot about Buddhism yesterday as I was preparing this talk, and they use the word noble a lot, the Four Noble Truths, and Bodhicitta can mean awakened or noble heart. And so there's a lot of nobility in the Buddhist teaching. And looking up noble in the dictionary, it means like moral or ethical. And I think of it more as awakened or opening up to the greater reality and seeing things as they really are. So I'm gonna use some of my own transmissions as to what I think a noble community is. Know that we're already doing it, but I think that we can do more with it. One thing that I've meditated on in terms of a noble community is that a noble community refrains from blame. Are we blaming anybody in our lives? Are we blaming the pandemic on anybody? You know, I almost feel unqualified to stand up here and talk about blame and judgment because, my judgment has been rearing its ugly head quite a bit lately, particularly in the grocery store, you know? And I have to tell you, you know, I shop at Vaughn's in Santa Paula and I shop at Trader Joe's in Ventura, and I had the worst blame judgment experience at Trader Joe's. because they should know better. Trader Joe's had it all set up really well. Talk about false expectations. Trader Joe's had it set up really well, but the people were not cooperating. And it was so beautiful. They had a little hibiscus that you were supposed to stand on to be 6 feet apart from the other people. And the people in Trader Joe's were not respecting the hibiscus. And I wanted to go through there with a bullhorn and say, respect the hibiscus, people. The hibiscus is serious. Stand on your hibiscus. That's what blame looks like. And I'm not sure if I can get past it. But anyway, I'm going to carry on as if I am past it. And maybe by the end of this talk, I will have a new approach to people who do not stand on their hibiscus. So I noticed in terms of this pandemic and in terms of the course that it's taking is that there is a lot of blame going around. And I've talked to so many people that have different ideas of who to blame. Some people blame the president. Some people blame Gavin Newsom, the governor. Some people are blaming people who don't wear masks. Some people are blaming protesters. Some people are blaming the police. Some people are blaming beer, as I said early on. Some people are blaming God. Some people are blaming people who are going to bars and taking off their masks. Some people are blaming churches because a lot of churches insisted on gathering. There is so much blame all over the place about what this pandemic is. And, you know, I think the truth is that we don't really know what it is. Some people are blaming Dr. Fauci, you know, and we don't really know what it is. This is new. This is new, and we're all fumbling around trying to figure out what to do. And I'm sure better decisions could have been made on a lot of different levels, but we're still fumbling. And I don't know that blame, rampant blame, that we get stuck in really serves anybody. I was thinking about blame, thinking that blame is, it feels so powerful. You feel like you're doing something when you're blaming somebody, but it really is quite disempowering because it is projecting, I would say, our fear and our shame onto others. You know, if I blame this person and say this is his or her fault, then I don't quite have to feel the level of uncertainty that I would feel if I wasn't blaming this person. I can define it by saying this is this person's fault. So that messes us up. And then the shame part, it's like I'm going to blame this person for being human. And that means I don't have to look at my own human frailty and my own human weaknesses and my own humanity that sometimes makes mistakes and sometimes doesn't have all the information. I was listening to this podcast the other day. It's, let me pull out the quote so I get it right. It's Peter Crone was appearing on a podcast called Broken Brain, How to Resign the Subconscious Mind, which is an awesome podcast, by the way. And Peter Crone said, I think he's a neuroscientist who works also in spiritual matters, and he said, when we judge another person, when we're making someone wrong, this is a disservice to self and other. You are denying the logic that that person could be doing anything other than what they are doing right now. It's like pointing at the sun and saying the sun should be over there. When we make other people wrong, we deny the logic of their DNA, their conditioning from their parents, their school, what they've been taught through life. And right now, what is happening right now is a compilation of their life. So for me to think that they can act differently doesn't make any sense. If you went through their circumstances, you would be doing what they are doing. You may not agree with this, but this view gives you understanding. This brings you compassion. And by the way, if this makes people uncomfortable, like saying, I would never do that, you may want to think again and say, if I have really gone through what this person has gone through, I might be doing that, because we're all really alike under the surface. And also, the other part that may give you comfort is that if you're not blaming somebody, but you're looking at them with compassion and understanding, it doesn't mean that you have to agree with them. You can still set limits, set boundaries, try and do the right thing, try and invoke justice, but we do it from a much kinder place and a much more understanding and compassionate place that in the long run is likely to get better results. When we blame people, they get defensive. When we try and understand people, there is a hope, a small hope, that they will be willing to listen and that we will be heard too. And the third force takes over in this respectful communication, and something new is born in the third force. So my invitation to everyone here today and everybody watching from afar is to look at your life and see who you might be blaming for the troubles in your life or the troubles in your world, and then see if you just want to approach that in a slightly different manner. You don't have to let it go all at once, but just say, you know, I am willing to look at my tendency to blame others and to recognize that even though it feels righteous and empowering, it's really quite disempowering. And so I'm willing to look within and see what within me is seeking this blame, and to release that and heal that and see what newness emerges from that new condition of mind. I don't like to give guarantees, but I kind of guarantee that that can change your life, okay? If we do it consistently. If we do it consistently with a great love and great compassion for the self as well as we're doing it. The other thing that I think a noble community does is that we seek infinite possibilities in the face of limitation. I mean, let's face it, this pandemic has been limiting in some ways. It's limited people's livelihood, it's limited people's ability to interact socially, it's limited people's ability to visit loved ones who are in the hospital or loved ones who are dying even. And it's limited even simple things that we used to take for granted, things like hugs. I don't know if this happens to you guys, but occasionally I'll turn on the television and I'll see people hugging and I'll be like, oh my God, they're hugging. That's a thing of the past, right? It's weird. Our minds are really switching quickly to embody this new reality that is so strange and so foreign to what we've been doing in the past. But the noble community takes all of that and it seeks new possibilities, especially in the face of limitation and especially in the face of adversity. I've told this story before, but I want to tell it again in the reframe of the pandemic. Oh, I guess it was about a year ago that our friend Nipun Mehta, who is, he's sitting right there. He's next to Moses now, isn't he? He's right over there next to Moses. Dalai Lama's peeking over his shoulder. Very nice. Anyway, he brought this gentleman from India, Arun Dada is his name, and he was somebody that followed around Gandhi's, what do you call it? Not predecessor comes before, right? Successor, thank you. David Carrigan, once again. Charades move. Followed Gandhi's successor through India, Vinobe Bhav, that did a great land giveaway that really changed a lot of the economics of India. It was a wonderful experience, and he came here and he spoke to us. And one of the Arun Dada stories is a story about when he was first gifted a house, and he had this horrible neighbor. Anybody out there have a horrible neighbor, or anybody in here? If you have ever had a horrible neighbor, let's see a show of pinkies or a show of thumbs. We've had one or two, but we ended up liking them in the long run. Anyway, he had a neighbor that would take all of his junk and put it on Arun's lawn. And finally, Arun spoke to them, and they said, you can't do this anymore. I know it's your business, but you have to get your stuff off of my lawn. Very respectfully, he said that. He set a boundary. And that caused a bit of problem. The neighbor came over and stood at Arun's door and he yelled at him and he cursed at him and he took off his glasses and he broke them. Time went on. The neighbor was very loud. Arun heard him speaking on the phone, talking to his friends, and he was cursing a lot. And Arun did not really like to be around that language, but he just let it go. And then he heard a conversation where the neighbor ended the conversation by saying, Jai Shri Krishna, which is like praise beloved Krishna, a spiritual reference to Krishna, who is the god of love. Now, in the background, his relationship with the neighbor had evolved. They were starting to at least be on terms where they weren't fighting with each other and they were just sort of saying hello to each other, but not very in a friendly manner. And so Arun decided that this was not enough, that he and this neighbor needed to mend things and needed to be healed. And so he spoke to the neighbor and he said, every time we see each other, you know, I heard that you said Jai Shri Krishna on your phone conversation. What if we just say Jai Shri Krishna to each other? And so they did. Every time they passed each other, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna, and again and again and again. And that evolved into something where they actually started to care about each other, where they actually started to care about the well-being of the other. And, you know, who could have seen that coming? Nobody. But the noble community takes the first step towards reconciliation. The noble community holds the space open for a possibility that is beyond our experience, beyond our knowing. And the noble community does this with faith in the reconciling factor that is omnipresent, that is always around us, in faith in the face of the knowing that love always prevails. Love is stronger than conflict, than adversity, than viruses, than anything. You know, and the metaphor that I'm making with this and the coronavirus is that the coronavirus is like that mean neighbor dumping stuff on our lawn, stuff that we don't want, using bad language that we don't want to hear, getting in our face, breaking our glasses, forcing us to wear masks, forcing us to socially distance, forcing us to give up a bunch of stuff. And do we curse at it? Do we treat it like it's an enemy? Or do we just say, Jai Shri Krishna? Or something else, if that works for you. This too is a blessing. Spirit, help me reveal the blessedness in this situation. Spirit, I know that there is a gift in this for me and for everyone. Let us open our hearts to be that place. Let us hold the higher space. Let us hold the high watch. Let us move into that spaciousness where we can feel the energy of reconciliation that is just purring, whirring beneath the surface that wants to come out, but it won't come out unless we give it permission to come out. And if we're busily blaming others, and if we're busily complaining about the pandemic, and if we're busily thinking about the good old days and how good it used to be and why can't we go back there, if we're busily projecting our expectations on what reality should be, then we miss what reality is. And as it said in the rest of that quote, reality is sacred. When we treat everything as if it is sacred, then the whole world becomes holy. When we treat everything that is holy, the whole world becomes sacred. And you know, there is a little flaw in that sentence, right? There's a when and an if. When we treat the whole world as if it is sacred, then the whole world becomes sacred. Really, the whole world is sacred right now. It's sacred right now, but we don't have the eyes to see it. But we gain the eyes to see it by letting go. By letting go of blame, by letting go of the urge to fight, by letting go of the urge to be right, by letting go of our resistance to uncertainty, by moving into the uncertain place and recognizing that uncertainty is a synonym for the groundless field of all possibilities, by recognizing that there is something holy happening here in this pandemic. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? I'm feeling it right now just by saying it out loud. There is something holy happening in this pandemic, and it's giving me chills, man. It's giving me chills. I hope you all are getting chills. Amen, sister. Yeah, it's giving me chills. There is something holy happening here in this pandemic, and if we can open ourselves to be that noble community that can receive it through our letting go, that will have a profound impact on all of us as individuals and as a spiritual community and as a world that sometimes seems troubled. You know, I often go back to something that my spouse, my husband, used to say to me early on when we were dating, and I still married him, but he used to say that spiritual work spiritual work is conscious labor and intentional sacrifice. Suffering. Yeah, you're right, suffering. Yeah. Yeah, he's right, suffering. I always get those two mixed up. Spiritual work is conscious labors and intentional suffering. And I always thought, okay, the conscious labors part I can get, but the intentional suffering, not so much. Don't want to do that. But this is what I'm talking about here. We are suffering the indignity of letting go of our blame. We are suffering the indignity of letting go of our expectations of what reality should be. We are suffering the indignity of letting go of the idea that we should be in control of others and ourselves, and we are simply suffering, allowing the grandeur of the relationship of ourselves with reality, which is really one, to pour through us in remarkable and outstanding ways that we never could have imagined. You know, think about some of the synchronicities in your lives, things that have come up for you that you never could have imagined. I'm looking at Ed and Lucky right now. I wasn't going to talk about this, but it just came to me. Looking at Ed and Lucky, who were childhood sweethearts, and then how many years later? Okay, one says 40, one says 50, okay. Okay, 40. 40 years later, Ed does a Google search for Lucky, and he finds her, and he marries that girl. What? Show of hands, everybody. Yay. At home, too. Yay. You know, synchronicities, magic. Thinking of the Beatles. I read something about the Beatles yesterday. You know, Let It Be. David sang a Beatles song at the beginning of the service, in case you were late. Let It Be. And it talked about how on a whim, Paul McCartney went to a party, a high school party, I believe it was, and John Lennon was there playing with his high school band, and he was the lead singer, and Paul McCartney really liked what he heard, and so they talked, and they played for each other, and they asked Paul McCartney to join the high school band, and half of the Beatles were born in that synchronistic moment that changed the face of music. You see what we're dealing with here? You see what we're dealing with? We're dealing with an intelligence that is so intelligent. Forgive me for dissing ants, but we're like ants compared to it. Just an incredible intelligence that shines the sun and places the stars and created us up out of the earth and stardust. And if we just relax and let go and be that noble community, then we can have that. We already have it. It's just a matter of knowing that we have it through our conscious labors and intentional suffering, letting go, allowing. One more thing. A noble community makes headlines into heartlines. Oh, don't get me started on headlines. You may have noticed that headlines tend to be a bit salacious and fear-producing. I know that there's controversy about that. I know that some people think that all headlines are true. And they may not be. I used to enjoy watching for mistakes on the news when they would say we're Bill Clinton lived in New York, they would say Chautauqua. No, they would say Chappaqua, and it's Chappaqua, because I grew up around there. When somebody would have a famous person would have a baby, they'd put a picture of my friend Debbie on CNN, and I'd be with her, and I'd be like, you delivered that baby? And she'd be like, nope, I'm just a midwife, and I deliver a lot of celebrity babies, but I didn't deliver that one, you know? So the news is making mistakes all of the time. And forgive me, but I think that with the 24-hour news cycle, there is a bit of an inspiration on the part of newsmakers to amp things up a bit and to get people a bit riled and excited so that they turn in. And I notice so often that headlines often tell, and the articles accompanied with them, often tell only a part of the story. You know, when I speak to people on all sides of the political spectrum, I say, okay, I hear you, but did you consider this? what would you do knowing that this isn't mine? This is part of life. And usually it turns into a very, very respectful conversation where there's a greater broadening of understanding and compassion for the other. So headlines tend to get us a little bit whipped up, but a noble community makes heartlines instead of headlines. I want to share this reading that I got from the Church of Facebook, shared with me by Brother Brock. And it says, by the way, I don't know the source. I couldn't find the source, but it was on this guy's post. It says, sometimes I just want it to stop. Talk of COVID, protests, looting, police brutality, I lose my way. I become convinced that this new normal is real life. But then I met an 87-year-old who talks of living through polio, diphtheria, Vietnam, protests, and yet is still enchanted with life. He seemed surprised when I said that 2020 must be especially challenging for him. No, he said, looking me straight in the eyes. I learned a long time ago not to see the world through the printed headlines. I see the world through the people that surround me. I see the world with the realization that we love big. Therefore, I just choose to write my own headlines. Husband loves wife today. Family drops everything to come to grandma's bedside. He patted my hand. Old man makes new friend. His words collide with my worries, freeing them from the tether I had been holding tight. They float away. I am left with a renewed spirit. My headline now reads, Woman Overwhelmed by the Spirit of Kindness, and the reminder that our capacity to love is never ending. That's my kind of headline. And it's true. It's true. It's perhaps truer than what we may read on the news or hear on the news. That for all of the bad things that are happening, you know, even with the virus, I know it's serious, and I don't mean to diminish it, and I'm taking it seriously, obviously, because we pulled back on the church and we're wearing masks and all of that, but we can't forget the other reality of the goodness in life and the power and the presence of love that is in all beings, and also, as I said before, stronger than any virus. That's why my theme and my mantra for much of this has been love prevails. Love is stronger than death. Love is stronger than coronavirus. Love is stronger than separation. Love is stronger than having to wear a mask. Love is even stronger than those people who won't stand on their hibiscus in Trader Joe's. Now, the good news about this community is that I think we already are, as I said before, we already are a noble community, but I just want us to go deeper. One of the ways that we're doing that is, again, as I mentioned in the announcements, is that we're doing another needs service to call forth more opportunities for us to serve one another and serve the world. One of the things that came out of the meeting that we had about the needs survey was to start to focus more on acts of kindness that we are doing. So Brock, who is the liaison of our kindness ministry on the board, he posted a post on Facebook that said, tell about an act of kindness that you've witnessed. So I have my own VCSL headlines that I'd like to share with you. VCSL headlines. Danny sees Ben delight in buying food for a homeless man. Practitioner Vicky was seen tending the meditation garden. Joan uses grant writing skills to protect a pond. Kathy reaches out to comfort a friend on the anniversary of their dog's death. Barb Jelinski gave a man the gift of this church. Carol sings to the bunnies. Neighbor buys groceries for Carolinda. Rick sings the praises of Uncle Bob. Dina sings the praises of the virtual virtuous choir. You see what we're doing here? We're doing something magnificent. And the thing is that, you know, it can seem like this pandemic can stop us. It can seem like this pandemic can hold us back. But really, the truth that I know about this pandemic, about everything that's happening right now, all of the unrest, is that things are bubbling up. Things are bubbling up to be healed. Things are bubbling up to call forth a greater version of ourselves as individuals, but also to call forth a greater version of ourselves as a spiritual community. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know how we're going to do it. And that is a very good place to be. Because I think together we can stay open to the third force. Some people call it the Holy Spirit. Some people call it the Shakti energy. And allow that divine presence to move through us with the clear intention of being a force for good in the world. Let's do that now. And let us pray.